Good morning.
Morning. How's it going?
Hi.
Hi, it's so cold where I am. Are you guys cold? Where are you, Bronte?
I'm in Mount Isa and it's like the first day we've had of cold. It's been like 30 all year and I'm freezing.
Oh my gosh. Yes, I have not warmed up. I've got my coat over my legs, and yes, it's not helping. Oh dear. Anyway, we'll just wait a minute or so, and we'll see if anyone else jumps on. Otherwise, we can get started. Have you both had a look at the stuff for today?
I jumped on and did it like in the last 15 minutes, the case then.
Cool. Really, it's just so we can chat about it, so you're not coming in completely unaware of what we're doing, so don't stress at all. And it's not assessed, so pressure's off. Do you feel good that all your assess stuff is done? Hey, John.
Hello.
How are you?
Good, good.
That's
Probably my busiest week today in terms of work, but just next week I was switching workloads in the hospital, so
Oh,
how it
okay.
goes, yeah.
Right. Is this you've changed your role or it's just within
Oh
your
no, just within the role, like we do rotations for like
Oh.
different workloads, caseloads, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Have you had a chance to have a look at what we're doing today or not with work?
The supplements thing.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
yeah, I have.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. Okay. Well, let's get started. And if anyone else jumps in, then that's cool. The first thing I wanted to just have a discussion about was when is it appropriate? Oh, wait, actually, let's go this way. When is it not appropriate to recommend supplementation? Like, what are some situations where that you would need to consider and think twice about recommending supplements to athletes or people in general?
I guess if they don't have like a solid basics around just their food and nutrition, or like if their relationship with food is just a little bit off at the moment, like it's not very stable or something. Yeah.
Definitely.
If the supplement that they want to take is a dangerous one or not.
Legal.
Yep.
Yep. Excellent. Excellent suggestion. Hey, Eloise.
Hey.
How are you? We're just having a chat about the discussion around supplements. So you just jumped in, so it's all good. Haven't missed anything,
Oh,
really.
good. My Zoom just decided to update as soon as I
Don't you
went to
love
go
that?
join. Yeah.
Finding them all the time. Okay, so any other times where or situations where you might be really considering that supplementation may not be appropriate. So we've already said that, food, diet, nutrition, not in a good place in the first instance. If what they're taking is dangerous or illegal or banned or whatever, anything else that you can think of?
The more younger ones.
Yeah, absolutely. So SDA actually put out a position paper was a little while ago about around supplement use in adolescent athletes, and pretty much it is not recommended across the board. There's obviously going to be times where supplementation may be warranted, but in general, for adolescent athletes, we are really looking to optimize the diet and also optimize their physiology at that time, which is the potential for growth is huge. There's, their natural ability to put on mass, for example, is enhanced during those years. So we're really trying to look at food first for all athletes, but particularly our younger athletes, and not generally recommending supplements to them. Okay, so let's get into case study number one. Gina. Gina is a 29-year-old female, functional fitness, which is kind of like CrossFit, which for anyone who's not familiar with that term, seeking advice for some tendinopathy injury-related issues, suffering from a rotator cuff and elbow tendinopathy with recurring flare-ups associated with return to training after periods of being inactive. She's preparing for a competition in the next 6 months and is conscious of the effect of the lack of training has had on her physique. She feels like she's getting fat from not doing enough work and is keen to ensure that she stays in competition state during this period. So she's working with the physio, who's currently recommended a range of supplements to reduce her inflammatory response to exercise. He has recommended Swiss high strength wild fish oil, one a day, and Bioglan organic turmeric, one a day, to reduce inflammation. As mentioned, she's concerned about not being able to train and wants to ensure she doesn't put on fat mass. She's decided the best option for her over this period is to go vegan to avoid additional calories associated with animal proteins and remove the pro-inflammatory nutrients associated with red meat intake. And then we've got some data around her body composition there. Just looking at that body composition data, what are your initial thoughts? Any takeaways from looking at that?
It's quite lean to already start off with.
Yeah. So typically females sitting under that sort of 20% body fat is quite lean, quite lean. So for men, it's lower, but for women, like 16% is a lean measure. Where that's come from, who knows? Because measuring on one body scan machine to another, or whether it's come from skin folds or who knows, can vary dramatically, but really she is quite lean already. Okay, so we've got Gina's typical dietary intake, which I won't read through, but that's all there. So the first question is, Gina typically takes a protein supplement after training and is keen to hear your thoughts on the vegan protein powder she's taking, raw protein isolate by Amazonia. Determine for Gina if it's safe, does it contain any WADA prohibited substances, and is it the most effective supplement with her goal of maintaining increasing muscle growth. Utilize all resources outlined in the submodule to answer this question. So firstly, Gina's got she wants to be lean, but she wants to be with mass, and she doesn't want it, like, she's vegan. She's got a lot going on right now, which is not uncommon. But specifically looking at her supplementation, has anyone jumped on to have a look at the raw protein isolate by Amazonia? Yeah. Do we know if it's safe? Comments.
So I went on the SIA app, and although this particular raw protein isolate isn't on there, there are other Amazonia products that actually popped up on the app, which had similar ingredients, if not more ingredients than the one that Gina is taking, and it's got the HASTA certification and things. So that's why I think it's a bit like lower with the WADA banned substances, low risk of having those substances. The only concern I had with it was there's a leaf extract in the ingredients list, which might raise some concerns in terms of the liver toxicity. But when I went onto the examine.com and looked up what that leaf extract actually was. It's actually just a natural sweetener, and it has very minimal genotoxic effects and things like that if it's overconsumed. So
yeah,
overall, I think it's quite safe.
Okay, good. Yeah. I'll just make a comment on, so that for those of you who don't know, the Sports Integrity Australia app is something that's just a free download that you can use with athletes so that they can check if their supplements are batch tested, third party batch tested. So all of the batch tested supplements pop up on there. So you can just go in if you need to look for one that is batch tested, or you need to check your supplement, you can do it in the app, which is really handy. And the thing to be careful of, particularly with athletes who are competing in sports where they are drug tested. So I know CrossFit as a sport is tested. Some of the other, like if it's just like a local functional fitness competition, probably not, but depending on what she's competing in. Lots of companies only batch test some of their products. So, and that's a classic example that John's just brought up. Like some of the products in this range or in this company are batch tested, but this one is not. So you can't assume that a product is safe or low risk just because some of the other products in that range are batch tested. Does that make sense? So that, and this, having a look at this product, the list of ingredients, it's very, like in my opinion, it's low risk. There's not many ingredients. There's not many things extra added to it. Like a lot of proteins have, they might have creatine and carnitine and beta-alanine and everything else in it under the sun in very small amounts, mind you, that really do nothing. So this product is fairly, like a fairly short list of things. So in my opinion, it's very low risk, but we can't assume that it doesn't have any risk associated with it because it's not batch tested. So even though some of the other products are, and that also goes for some of the products, the same products, you can buy a batch tested version through the company, and then you can buy a version that's not batch tested at the supermarket, for example. So we, in our club, we use some of the Body Science products, and we always buy the tested version. So a pre-made protein shake, we have to specifically buy the tested versions from the company, but you can buy them at Woolies and Coles, but they're not tested. So that's something to be mindful of. To reduce the risk to an athlete, they want to be buying products that are third-party batch tested. So that includes the two companies that do it in Australia are Hasta and Informed Sport. So there's two different labels, and they're the things that you want to be looking for. So is it safe? Yes, I think it's a safe product. But if it's something that she is competing in a competition that is tested, it's not without risk because it hasn't been tested. So we don't know if it has other things in there, banned substances that are either not on the ingredients list, which does happen, or, you know, there's the name of something on there that we just don't recognize, for example. Okay, is it going to be effective, this supplement, for her goal of maintaining increasing muscle mass? What do you think?
Just looking on the AIS framework, so with protein isolates, they're in group A, which suggests they've got a pretty strong scientific evidence base. But just with pea protein, it's got low biological value, not a lot of leucine. So just in terms of whether it will work, just the effects may not happen as quick or as evident as someone who's not on a vegan diet. But it does also have the carbohydrate protein in there as well, so that makes it a more complete protein source.
Yeah, absolutely. So the blend of the pea and the rice protein is pretty typical in plant-based protein powders these days, because it means that you're getting all the different amino acids from the different proteins, and combined it is probably an effective way to help maintain muscle mass, probably a really good addition to her diet. as well. So no issues in terms of really effectiveness, but just the, probably that non third party tested is the biggest issue for any athlete. Just in terms of her daily diet, like I think there's probably a lot of room to move in terms of protein. So like I don't think a protein powder is a bad idea, particularly if she's struggling to increase her protein intake through food. But I think there's probably a lot of room to optimize protein intake through food before we kind of even look at supplementation. Would everyone agree with that? I can see some nods. Yeah. Cool. Okay. So Gina is interested on your take on whether fish oil and turmeric will be effective at reducing her inflammatory response with exercise and help her injury. What are our thoughts on either of those?
Both of them are in the group B of the AIS framework, so which suggests they do need a bit more research behind them. I think we do have like a pretty strong understanding, good evidence behind them that they can reduce markers of inflammation, but whether that translates into like reducing pain and improving performance, like lifting heavier weights and stuff, there's not a lot of evidence behind that bit. They might be like at low risk of having banned substances because they've got just the main ingredient in them, like the fish oil is just EPA and DHA and the turmeric is just turmeric. But just need to keep in mind that they're not magic pills that will cure the inflammation in her joints.
Yeah. Any other comment?
I was thinking fish oil could be like she's going vegan. She's not eating fish, and that means the only way she can get omega-3 will be through the supplementation, unless she had like a whole bag full of walnuts every day. So, and I don't see that happening given that she's so scared of gaining weight.
Yeah.
So from that perspective, I agreed with everything Jonathan said, plus she's not getting any omega-3. Not sure about the turmeric thing. It was there's turmeric lattes and everything out there since that thing came out. There was all these like turmeric lattes like a few years ago.
Yeah.
Those are like anti-inflammatory.
Very cool.
Yeah. But I was quite comfortable to see the omega-3 one with her.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other thoughts or comments? Bronte or Eloise, are you comfortable with these?
I agree with the omegas, like the fish oil for sure, if she is going vegan, but I don't really see that turmeric would kind of, I'm not sure if that would really be that beneficial. I think her overall diet could do with some fixing first before adding that kind of stuff in, and whether or not that would actually be beneficial. But I definitely agree with the fish oil.
Yep. Yep. Bronte, you feel comfortable with both of those? Have you thought of any other comments?
Yeah, I just feel like if we keep adding supplements as well, her diet's just going to be supplements rather than focusing on that food as well.
So, yeah. Great comment. Okay. So let's go into these a little bit more. So the fish oils is something I can't remember if I've spoken to you about this in another session, but something that we've been looking at quite a lot within our club at the moment. I've been lucky enough to do some testing with the University of Wollongong researchers from the School of Medicine looking at fatty acid profiling. So they came in and it's a finger prick test, which is really cool, which, mind you, a room full of very large, strong, tough footballers very surprisingly struggled with a finger prick test. So what they did is they profiled the whole team, NRLW and the NRL team, and we were able to see everyone's levels of omega-3 fatty acids. And really interesting, their research that's been spanning for, you know, 10, 15 years, which I said to them, I had no idea this was going on at the uni. Like, I didn't know there's any sports nutrition stuff going on. It's crazy that what happens behind closed doors. But anyway, so they're doing this omega-3 profiling and they're finding out really just how beneficial having sufficient stores of DHA particularly. And they're seeing that if you have DHA in the body and in really good stores, your tissues that are damaged will preferentially take that up to be able to use it to it's the pro-resolvent in the DHA, and they call it like this mopping up process. So the DHA kind of is utilized by the tissues if it's there and available to kind of mop up the mess that's been made. So whether that's inflammation, whether that's injury, you know, and especially acutely, there's this kind of mopping up of the injury. And we're really interested in concussion, with what it can do for concussion. So when you get a concussion, obviously like an energy crisis in the brain, and the brain then will preferentially take up that DHA, they think, and they're pretty sure, to help to recover from that much quicker. So I wasn't even really across how beneficial this having enough DHA could be. And then also second to that, how hard it is to have good stores of DHA. So the only people in our squad who had sufficient levels of DHA were those who supplemented every single day. So all of the players supplement on training days, but not all of them take it every single day at home. So the ones who took it every day at home, plus had good intake of fish throughout the week, a couple of times a week, their levels were above 8%, which is where we want them. Almost everyone else who was already supplementing at every single training day and have been doing since November, so they had a really good sort of lead in, were under that 6%. And some of them who we already know who are either inconsistent with taking their pills, or all three of the players who signed on sort of mid-Feb, March, beginning of the season, like they were latecomers, they hadn't been supplementing since November, only since Feb, March, they were all low, sort of in that 5-4% mark, which is the red zone. So just knowing like they were all still taking them a couple of times a week, and most of them eating at least a little bit of fish, levels were low, really low. So typical, and what we saw with our NRLW squad, who they were tested just right at the beginning of their season, so no supplementation coming into that, they were all below 6%, 5%, most of them in the 4%, so much, much lower. And they kind of ate fish, like typical Australian diet, basically, is what the researchers said. That's what they kind of see in typical Australian food. And what they see in the US is much lower levels than that. So even if someone is eating some fatty fish a couple of times a week, what that tells me, and what that tells, you know, from having these conversations, is that it is actually quite hard to have really good stores and levels of DHA. So for this athlete who is vegan or has just gone vegan, so that's going to be really hard to do, well, impossible to do through food. The next conversation is she comfortable taking an omega-3 supplement that's fish oil, or do we need to find an algae oil supplement that is also vegan, which then comes at an extra cost? You can't just buy them, you know, off the shelf. So cost is probably the other factor within the diet, within the context of like supplements, sorry, is that we need to really factor in, like, are you willing to spend all this money on these supplements? And probably for omega-3s, I'd be like, yeah, I think that's worth it in her case. But for other things, maybe not. Just the last point on the fish oil omega-3 conversation is getting a fish oil that's high enough in DHA is really hard. So I know the ones that I have at the moment are, I think, Nature's Way, high strength, like 1500 milligrams. Got them from Woolies half price, which is how I normally buy my fish oil, you know, whatever's on special. but I always buy high strength. And then after having these conversations with the research team and actually looking at it, it actually doesn't even specify how much EPA versus DHA is in there. It just says so much EPA D plus DHA, which I was like, ooh, dodgy. So the supplements, so at Dragons, we use Pillar Performance, which is, they're all batch tested. So still, again, if she's competing in a competition that needs, that is tested, you'd be wanting to have batch tested omega-3s, which are much more expensive, and batch tested turmeric or curcumin, which is what we, the component of turmeric that we actually want to be supplementing with. So that's another factor. So there's a couple of Blackmores ones that I found are really good. So there's Blackmores Brain Health, I think, and Blackmores DHA, that are both high in DHA. And but if, as long as there's, you can see it's there and it's significant, then that's kind of what you're going for. So lots of things that I've learned just recently about this.
Nicola, do you know, like, that's really interesting. Do you know if with that omega-3, whether if they take it every day for a particular duration, whether that's months or years, then, like, do they always have to take it every day, or does it come a time where it's like your body adapts to it and is able to store more and you don't have to take it daily, or are they not there yet?
Yeah, so you definitely store it. So what they kind of think is that a period of time, say they usually kind of think 8 to 12 weeks of aggressive supplementation is enough to get your stores up, and then you can just maintain that. So you can reduce your supplementation, or if you're eating a fair amount of fatty fish, it might be that you supplement every second day and you continue with your fish intake, or like, so that, yes, you can get your stores up and then maintain that, but probably not, particularly in the case of a vegan athlete, go off them, but you can definitely reduce the amount that you're taking. Yeah.
Stores
that they're really looking to increase.
Cool.
Yeah.
If these were people outside of organizations that can fund for all of this.
I know.
There's really no way to test it, though, is there? Like, they don't have access to that fingerprint.
General public, it's much more expensive. Apparently it's a company in Melbourne that do it. It's about, I think, $80 to $100 a test. So you just send it off. But, yeah, like, would you get the average person to do that? Nah, probably not. But if you identify that someone's intake is low and their levels are likely to be low, then they haven't been supplementing regularly, you know, you could definitely sort of recommend a period of time where they increase that, and then you can just go, like, just make that, I would just make that.
Yeah, after 8 to 12 weeks.
Definitely. Okay. But really interesting, you know, the lead researcher was really interested that there seems to be no non-responders, and usually with supplements there are non-responders across every population that they have assessed, and they've done colleges in the United States, they've done cycling teams across Europe, they've done lots and lots of testing. There seems to be, they have never had anyone that hasn't responded well to supplementation. So I think that's really interesting and really positive.
Is that because Western diet is usually very low to begin with?
Yes.
We're starting from a very low mark.
Yeah.
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 That's so cool. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So we know that it works basically, which is cool. So all of that really interesting. And I don't know that, you know, I'm not sure if any of you got a chance to read the article by Kevin Tipton that was in the course, like just at the top of these notes, like one of the resources about nutrition supplements for injury. One of the discussion points in that article was around how inflammation is obviously really helpful for an injury to be able to help that healing process come along, and that's the purpose of inflammation, really. So there was an argument in this article, this was in 2015, the article was written, about potentially not being aggressive with supplementation of fish oil following injury because you don't want to dampen the inflammatory response. And that same with like taking anti-inflammatories, all that sort of stuff. You don't necessarily want to dampen that response because it's going to help the healing process. So with all this new information that's come to light about omega-3s, I think having good stores is the thing that's going to be the most beneficial, as opposed to aggressively recommending omega-3s after an injury to dampen that inflammatory response. Does that make sense? Still, now that I have all this new information about omega-3s from very trusted sources, probably I feel really comfortable recommending omega-3s in general, but also in the case of someone who's injured. That again doesn't need to be super aggressive, but I think it is going to be beneficial in that case. That's a big discussion just there in itself. Okay, so let's touch on turmeric. I've only looked into turmeric a little bit because there is some really nice research around that. And as John said before, it's in Group B. It's pretty solid. Like, there's some good things. Can be useful. But not just having turmeric. So in order to get the benefit from turmeric, you actually need to be supplementing with, you know, effective doses of curcumin, which is the key sort of ingredient in the turmeric. So, and you can buy supplements of that off the shelf. There's batch-tested supplements that you can buy. But again, it's never been something that I've been like, I think this is worth the money or the extra thing that we're going to be taking, particularly in my situation where in the club the athletes already take a lot of pills, they already take a lot of supplements. I'm very wary of just throwing something else in there because they don't want to take heaps of supplements, and we're already taking all the ones that we feel like are the most beneficial. I don't necessarily want to be chucking something else on top. But if someone else had unlimited funds to be spending on supplements and felt like they wanted to include something else, I don't think it's a bad idea. I don't think it's necessary, but it could be effective, along with, obviously, with this person, lots of dietary changes as well. Okay. Is that helpful? Clear? Questions?
So just with the omega-3, so it's good to increase your stores, increase your omega-3 profile, but aggressively supplementing to just dampen inflammatory responses isn't as ideal. Like, we want to, like, increasing stores is better than trying to just quickly treat the inflammation.
Yeah, I think so. That would be my take on it. So I wouldn't necessarily, I think you'd think twice about being really aggressive to try and manage the inflammation, but definitely using it as a way to increase stores, particularly over time in the tissues, really helpful.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And is it because sometimes, like, when you're training and stuff and you've got those inflammatory responses, actually having some of those inflammation can be beneficial to, like, training adaptations?
Yeah. And beneficial for the body to be able to do what it needs to do to heal, to respond. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If you haven't had a chance to read that article by Kevin Tipton, it's just linked in the top of this self-directed activity.
Okay.
It's quite an easy read, which is not often the way for journal articles. It's quite an easy read. It's actually quite interesting. Well, I found it quite interesting. It's sort of a bit of a narrative, I suppose, review. It's not super heavy in the, like, it's not a research study, you know, for example. So I found that quite interesting. But, yeah, again, just thinking that it is, you know, 8 years old now, so there's lots of new things. I haven't had a look at the actual research that's been published by the group at Wollongong Uni, but would be, if you're interested in reading more about their omega-3 stuff, the lead researcher is Greg Peoples. So it could be worth just looking up some of his work around omega-3s. And even if he's not the lead researcher on it, he'll be on the paper. So if you want to look up any of that stuff from Wollongong, it's under Greg Peoples.
How do you spell the last name?
People with an S, no apostrophe.
Yep.
Oh, you found one? That's quick.
Love Google.
Here we go. I should actually ask him just to send me, like, can you just send me your back catalogue of research? Here we go. So, yeah, so the group we've been working with, so Ryan is actually a dietitian, and he is doing his PhD around the muscle injury work with omega-3s. Michael is, I think he's completed his PhD, but he's sort of the one that's in the concussion space at the moment. And obviously Greg is the person who's leading all of that, which is, amazing to see. Their knowledge is like through the roof. And crazy to me that this has been going on for so long and really none of us in the performance team were this isn't like mainstream, I don't think, yet. And they have things that they're so sure about, and it's still not in group A for the AIS supplement thing. And, you know, there's lots of different reasons why that might be, but I just felt like it wasn't common knowledge yet. And they're like, oh, yeah, we've seen this for years. Oh, yeah, we know this for sure. Oh, yeah. Like, oh, my God. Just quite amazing, actually. So, yeah, really cool. Thank you for finding that for me. I'll have a look at that a little bit later. Okay, so question 3, Gina's also interested in any other supplements. And, again, just noting that obviously we're talking about supplements today, but all of us agree that we'd be talking about her diet in the first instance with this person. Any other supplements you think might be a benefit to her? She's thrown in another goal that she's keen to increase her strength and repeatability of effort in training. Are there any supplements that you think just specifically to that goal that might be beneficial for her in that instance?
I said creatine, although it's first of all rank A in the AIS framework. Yep. But although it doesn't have like direct implications in increasing strength, it will help her like generate more power in each of her lifts that she does, which over time would help to increase overall muscle strength. There's also like when I read some of the resources on the AIS, it can actually be beneficial during periods of recovery and injury because it can maintain levels of your creatine and help reduce any decrements in muscle mass that would have happened, like because you're not using your muscles as much when you're injured.
Yeah.
So while it can help to improve performance when Gina is training, it can also benefit her during when she's got a lot of inflammation and injury and probably reducing her activity a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful overview and summary of creatine. The other things I like about creatine is that it's safe, it's effective, it's cheap, it's accessible, easily to buy, you know, batch tested, can get it from Coles. So I think that's, yeah, I don't have anything to add to that, John. That was great. Any other things that potentially could help? Not sure. The only ones that I would even pop to mind might be beta-alanine, which works as a buffer, so kind of buffers the hydrogen ions that are produced when lactic acid is a byproduct, basically. So when you're working really hard and that kind of lactate feeling builds up, beta-alanine can work to buffer that. And again, it's one of those ones similar to creatine, similar to omega-3s. It's about the buildup in your muscles so that it can utilize it during times of training where it's really intense. So it can help with that repeatability of effort in training. So that might be something else. One of the other things could, again, it could be nitrates. So the beetroot juice can help with that. Oxygen, improved oxygen availability for repeat efforts. But again, like, would we go this far? I'm not sure. Maybe looking to increase nitrate rich vegetables in her diet might be a first place that we kind of go with that conversation instead of just automatically jumping to a supplement. They're the only other things that I would kind of even consider in that situation. Okay. Are we all good with Gina?
Sorry, Nicola, I have to go now. But thank
you. No worries. That's fine. Thank you for jumping on for as long as you did. See you later. Okay, so let's have a look at Jeff. Jeff is a 20-year-old male cyclist seeking supplement advice to enhance training and competition performance, complaining of low energy in training, just generally not feeling great in his everyday life, currently undertaking 4 to 5 hours of training per day and is training for a multi-stage race in 2 months, takes a banana and a bottle of Coke Zero with him for hard rides, and long rides are typically done fasted with breakfast after he finishes. Currently averaging 700 Ks a week on the road, plus 3 gym sessions. Over the last 6 months, he's lost 5 kilos. I don't know if you guys have picked up how many red flags is in this little spill so far. Feels he cannot afford to lose any more weight. He can't keep up his food intake as he often appetite is often low after riding. His testosterone levels are low, and he's interested in your advice on what supplements he might be able to take to increase this. I'm just a little bit smiling because it's so funny how everyone just automatically jumps to supplements, particularly in terms of testosterone. Guy at the bike shop where he works suggested the body science triandrol test, which is a natural way to increase, or as a natural way, sorry, to increase testosterone. His coach has also suggested to take JAK3D during his rides in conjunction with his Coke Zero. Aren't our friendly neighbours at the bike shop and the supplement shop just so helpful? Okay, so he's 20, got some info there. Weight is relatively low compared to his height and body fat 10%. So what's your advice to Jeff around the use of triandrolol? Is it safe? Do you think there's a risk? Will it work? What do you reckon? Who's had a look at it?
Yeah. very high risk and not safe. The main ingredient, first of all, like, it's got a lot of heavy metals in there. So that was one of the things in the module they were talking about with contamination of heavy metals and stuff. With the main ingredient that's on there, like, it's hypothesized to actually increase the testosterone levels, but there's actually no evidence to support it. I think I forgot where I found that, but yeah, I read it on examine.com, yeah. Yeah, so even though he's thinking it'll increase his testosterone levels, no, I don't think so. And it's probably doing more harm than actually what it's meant to, what he's actually trying to take it for.
Yep. Also, side note, once you start looking up all these supplements, it's so annoying because then you'll get spammed in like your social media feeds and stuff, supplement ads for testosterone boosters. So just keep it a side note. Okay, so yeah, not obviously not batch tested. So in that sense, you know, high risk, not necessarily really much evidence at all to suggest that it works. there's actually not a lot of natural ways to, through supplementation, to increase testosterone. There's a little bit of research around like zinc supplementation, but all the other things are either not effective or too high risk for athletes to be taking. Why do you think his testosterone would be low? What do you think is impacting that actually?
Underfueling. He said he's going faster in his long training sessions and Coke Zero, so even there's no sugar in that. So yeah, my biggest thing when I saw this was just actually we need to educate him on the basics first and get his fuel all sorted up first before then even thinking about better supplements than the ones that are recommended from these spiky boys. Yeah.
Yeah, good. Any other comments around low testosterone? No. Yeah, so I reckon probably a mixture of underfueling being the major one, stress, maybe lack of sleep, you know, all of those things have a huge impact on hormonal health and probably the reason why his testosterone is low. And, you know, doctors would look into it and make sure that it's everything checks out. But in terms of supplementation, there's not a lot you can do naturally to be able to increase it. So sometimes, you know, if it's really low and there's, you've tried to increase it and you're not an athlete who's in a tested sport, doctors will use testosterone replacement therapy, like things like that, to bring it back up, which is perfectly fine for general population. Like obviously you can't do it in sport because it gives you an advantage, but for, you know, people who have clinically low testosterone, doctors can use medicine to get that up, which is fine. Okay. Yeah, so the evidence is not there for that. Perfect. So we're probably not recommending the old testosterone booster. Okay. What's your advice to Jeff around the use of JAK3D? Is it safe? Is there a risk that it contains a wider band substance? Will it work? Does anyone know much about JAK3D?
No, it was the first time I actually heard about this one. So I looked it up and actually first thing that popped up was that there's actually been a death around someone not taking this particular one, but beforehand when it had a particular ingredient and this person died from it. So then they made a new one that doesn't have this ingredient, but it's quite similar, I'm pretty sure. I just think they're hiding it.
Like, why would they keep the same name, the same... Yes.
Yeah.
Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of an old school, like was the coolest thing around. Had a lot of issues. I didn't know about the death, but a lot of issues with, like, contamination, containing things that weren't legal. Yeah, lots and lots of issues. I think there was a thing, and we have a note here about there used to be like a loophole that supplements could get imported through New Zealand somehow and they didn't have to go through the same process of regulation. I don't know the full story, but I remember even we learned about this in the course when I did it a really long time ago. That has since sort of closed up. That's sort of tightened up a little bit, but I think there is still some way that you can buy it online or whatever. So I'm pretty sure you can't even buy it in Australia anymore, but I think you can buy it online. So anything like this, so it's a pre-workout essentially, and any pre-workout is not without risk. So if because of the long list of ingredients and because of all the things that are added to it, it's definitely a high risk product. So if any athlete's going to use a pre-workout, you want it definitely to be batch tested. So a protein powder with minimal ingredients, even if it's not batch tested, it's a low risk product, but it does carry risk still. Even products that are tested still carry some risk because it's not 100% safeguarded. Something like creatine monohydrate, single ingredient, nothing else added, very low risk. Still, you want it to be batch tested just to be safe, but, you know, it's a low risk product. A pre-workout, not low risk, like not low risk at all. So you want to make sure that if athletes are taking it, it is batch tested, just to be able to have that safeguard that there's nothing banned in that batch that they've tested. But something like this, no. Let's not go there. Yeah. So basically for this, Jeff, education is key around what we actually need to do to be able to help him, and maybe the supplements that are actually going to help in his circumstance. So if he is looking to supplement, what are some things that you might suggest that could be helpful for him in terms of, you know, his energy availability, his issues with fueling, not hungry after training, that sort of stuff? What might help?
I think once we get like the diet more sorted out, would probably be like potentially some sports bars, carbohydrate gels and caffeine stuff.
Yeah.
Is there caffeine as a supplement, or is it typically just like someone drinking like a little coffee shot with this, a little bit of caffeine in there? Or is it actually like in these boxes and stuff?
No, it can just be coffee. That's fine. So it's still considered a supplement. You still would factor it in like a supplement, as in not that it has to be tested, but as in when you're working it out for the person, how much they would take, for example, or how they would use it strategically around training. But you don't have to use supplemental version of it. You can definitely use coffee, particularly for 20-year-old is, you know, training. Like, you could absolutely use that. But yeah, I agree. Things like sports drinks, sports bars, like Sustagen Sport, recovery drinks, all that sort of stuff is probably going to be the best option for him in terms of helping him to get some nutrition in when he's not feeling like necessarily eating. That could be really helpful. And then definitely once some of those issues are sorted, caffeine can be great. The only thing about caffeine sometimes is when people use it to mask their fatigue. So he's already fatigued, he's already not training optimally. If we use caffeine in the first instance, it could be making him feel better, but he's not actually fueling. So absolutely, like you said, John, on top of increasing his nutrition, caffeine could be something that we use sort of as an extra to that. But it's glaringly obvious for Jeff that he needs to eat more. He needs to prioritize his food. There's so many things that would be beneficial for him outside of supplementation, I think. Okay. So just in terms of the places to go to be able to find supplement information, there is a link there to lots of different places. Examine is great. A lot of their stuff is locked now. Like, you need to create, I think you can just create a free account to be able to access more. And you can also pay at a very reasonable membership, maybe $100 a year or something. And to be able to get emailed, like, all updated research on lots of different areas, around sports, nutrition and exercise science, that sort of thing. So that's a great thing to utilize. The AIS is actually where I go generally for almost all of my supplement info, because usually what I'm looking for is things that are recommended. You know, I'm not normally looking up Jack 3D or things like that. So I often look at the AIS, and I really love it because it's got like quick practitioner fact sheets that sort of tell me about it, how much I can use. You know, it's really succinct in what I need to know, and it's got athlete fact sheets as well. So it's got things that are written specifically for athletes, which can be great to give to your clients. It can be great to just kind of work out how to explain things in different language. It's a little bit easier to understand. So that's a really great resource. And then obviously the Reds consensus statement is really good in terms of just learning and understanding about energy availability around you know, all the risks that come with REDS, just a lot of info on that in general. And like I said, that paper by Kevin Tipton is really quite easy to read. And I found it really interesting, actually. I hadn't read it before. Just things that are effective for injuries different types of injuries as well, but just noting that it is old a little bit now. So there's definitely some updates of things that I thought would be in there. There's nothing about collagen in there. There's nothing about creatine for concussion, and all those things have kind of come to light a little bit in the last few years. So yeah, that's a really interesting read as well. Okay. Super quick session today. Does anyone have any questions?
I just have one question back to, the omegas again.
Yep.
When you said that, so you're doing it with the players now and increasing their DHA levels, how much or like what milligram would they have to be taking per day to actually build up those levels?
So it depends on what their levels were. So if they were really low though, we've increased their supplement to 4 pillar pills, which is almost maybe 1600 2000 milligrams of EPA DHA per day to be able to get that up. Some of the players who were like mid-range, we've just doubled their dose on training days. So I think Greg had said to me that aiming for 1500 milligrams of the active ingredient, so of EPA DHA, with a significant portion of that coming from DHA, daily is a good amount to be able to get the levels up. So, so it really depends what the person is at. But some supplements, that's really hard to get. Like some supplements, just noting that an omega-3 capsule might be 1500 milligrams, but the active ingredient within that, it maybe is only 500 milligrams. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does. Yeah, thank you.
So I might actually, if you give me 1 second, I'll have a look back in my emails because I know he sent me something that could be very useful and to back me up here. You watch, I'm not going to be able to find it. Okay. I'll have a look for it. I knew this would happen. I'll have a look for it. And he did somewhere talk to me about the recommendations. So I'll have a look for that and I'll email it through like I normally do. And actually, Bronte, do you want to just pop your – oh, no, you sent me an email during the week, didn't you? Good. I've got your details. I'll add you to the group. I'll send that through just so you've got that clarification. But, yes, it would be just looking at where they're at the moment and then how to increase that. But pillars are pretty high strength and they recommend it to us 4 a day for, a significant period of time. And actually one of our staff members who – over the break, so sort of October, had a really significant heart episode, like heart attack, very fit, active person, which is why they think he didn't die, basically. And he had never supplemented and he doesn't eat any fish. And since that, so since November, he's been supplementing with 4 capsules a day, like religiously, from November to like whenever we got tested, which might have been a month or two ago, and his levels were like 11. So they want them above 8, and his were the best of anyone in the whole club. His were the best. So, and you know, I love that because it just shows if you are supplementing and you're doing it consistently, even if it's not that high, consistent, regular supplementation, we know that that is going to improve your levels. So, you know, I think whatever the person can afford, you have to also consider if they can afford to take 4 capsules every single day, and you might not need to be that high, but if you're taking whatever you're taking consistently, it's going to be effective. Yeah. Yeah.
So was his, that heart thing that happened before he started supplementing with the fish oil?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then just what happened after supplementation? Like, did it reduce chances or?
Oh, well, so, well, he hasn't had any other issues. Mm. Who knows? Who knows if, yeah, so he's got through that episode and he was like, shit, I better eat a bit better. I better take the supplements, you know, get on top of this. And then he started doing all of that. So now we can see that his levels are through the roof. Mm. Just really indicates, not that he's not going to have another event, but if he does, that he's, it's almost like this added protection that the body can use, and it will, they, what they know is that the body will preferentially use that DHA to be able to be able to get through that. So yeah, just for that extra protection. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm.
I also wanted to ask if you knew when the week six self-directed activity sort of feedback things would come back.
I don't know. No? I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I opted out of the marking part.
Okay.
it's not something I really enjoy doing. So I'm not sure. Yeah. I don't know if because of the staggered, you know, because it didn't have to be in by a certain time, I would assume that they're already working through it.
Yeah.
But I'm 100% sure when it's going to be back.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
But if you, that might be a question to pop in the SDA.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the discussion group, then Alan would be able to get back to you directly with that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions, comments? Cool.
Sorry, Nicola, I do have one. this isn't really to do with like just FAPS, but I noticed that there hasn't really been any information in like food or like nutrition and supplementation in like the lead up to a competition. Like there has been like a lot of info around just like regular training and things, but is there anything in particular that you would use or that you know of, like guides or anything like that for that type of thing?
Yeah. So in terms of what I would use or what I would consider going into an event or competition would be definitely nitrates. So the beetroot juice part of it. A lot of the research around that is actually leading into like endurance events and how that is helpful. And a lot of the protocols for that are, you know, you take it for 3 or 4 days leading into an event and then, you know, maybe on the morning of the night before, I'm not 100% sure for endurance. We use it in footy, but because every week is an event, we use it sort of, some of the boys will take it for big training sessions beforehand, and then some of them take it before the game, like a couple of hours before the game, but we don't use it sort of every day, that kind of thing. So that's definitely something to consider. Like caffeine's definitely one for use in events or in competition. And then a lot of your sports foods, so like gels, that kind of thing, really useful leading into. The other thing that some of our players use in because they don't like beetroot is the blackcurrant powder, I think it is. So this like anthocyanin, polyphenol, sort of stuff, and the blackcurrant, so you can read about that, it's actually on the AAS site, there's information about it, but the blackcurrant powder that comes out of New Zealand, so there's a company called Two Before that produce specific blackcurrants that have this specific polyphenol content, and they've got lots of research to support it, and it does, it sort of works, they think it works anti-inflammatory because of the antioxidant capacity as well, but they have sort of said it works in a similar way to what the beetroot juice does, and it improves oxygen availability as well. So they sell a version that's like a pre-workout kind of thing, and there's a caffeinated version and a non-caffeinated version. Whether that's super helpful, like some of the boys just take it as another option instead of the nitrate because they just hate the beetroot juice, it's gross. So yeah, that could be something as well leading into events that might be helpful. Yeah.
Thank you.
Welcome. Okay. Well, we'll leave it there. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. if you have any questions after today, just let me know and I'll try and find that recommendation. I'll email it through and I'll see you all in 2 weeks. Is the 2 weeks the one?
Yeah, that's the 14th of July. That's the one rescheduled.
That's the one I've rescheduled. Okay. Yeah. Can anyone make it?
I don't think I'll be able to just because of my manager in the workplace when she's saying any sort of those DA mentoring and things like that would have to be outside of work hours, so yeah, I probably won't be able to make it. Yeah,
that's fine. So Bronte, you're good for Friday. Eloise, how does that work for you?
At the moment it's okay. I'm just not sure if work will end up popping up, but at the moment that's fine. Yeah,
that's all good. Cool. Like, honestly, as long as there's one person I can chat with and I'm not just talking to myself, cool. No pressure, Bronte, if it turns out you can't come. I'm sure hopefully someone else can pop in. But anyway, regardless, if it is just a video and a recording of me talking, that's what it is. That's cool. So apologies, I had to change that. But so that'll be the next session is that Friday the 14th at 12 o'clock. And then the final session is back to Saturday. And we're almost done. Yay! How exciting. All right. Well, have a great Saturday and I'll see you all soon.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
No worries. See ya.